Welcome to the KPMG Financial Reporting Podcast Series, delivering fresh insights and perspectives around major accounting and financial reporting developments across a range of timely topics. We thank you for joining today.
Hello, I'm John Barbagallo, a Managing Director at KPMG. And in today's episode, I have the pleasure of discussing the FASB's new accounting standard update, ASU 2024-01, on scope application of profits, interest, and similar awards, with two of my colleagues from KPMG's Department of Professional Practice, Nick Bergmeier and Rivka Grunsender. Nick and Rivka are in our national office and work closely with our engagement teams and clients on employee compensation issues. Nick and Rivka, welcome to today's podcast. But before we dive into the details of the ASU, I'd like to start today's podcast with some background on profits and interest and why the FASB added this project to its technical agenda. So Nick, why don't you start us off?
Sure thing. So I think the first thing to keep in mind is the term profits interest is not defined anywhere in GAAP, and plus this ASU isn't going to define it for us either. Now, in the tax code, profits interest is defined, and it's defined as really a partnership interest other than a capital interest. And to be a profits interest, that interest holder would receive no proceeds if the partnership were immediately liquidated at the time they received that interest. So let me maybe give you a quick example of what a profits interest typically would be. So imagine a partnership with two classes of equity, Class A and Class B. Class A partners capitalize the entity with $1 million of consideration to purchase it. They issue Class B awards to the employees, but those employees are only going to be entitled to a distribution if the Class A unit holders receive their $1 million back plus some return. In that situation, when the profits interest holders receive their units, they wouldn't have been entitled to anything because the fair value of the entity was $1 million at the time. So they hadn't crossed that hurdle yet. So that's typically how these units and interests work. And that's why that we see them often granted as incentive compensation, oftentimes with like portfolio companies of private equity firms, because it incentivizes employees to grow the value of the business over that the initial investment by the investors, and provide those employees the opportunity to participate in future profits and equity appreciation from inception. Now, pre-ASU 2024-01, the accounting literature did not tell us how to account for profits interest. And entities kind of applied what I would say is like a facts and circumstances approach to determine how to account for these. More specifically, whether that a profits interest award was a share-based payment under Topic 718, or in substance, a profit sharing or bonus plan typically accounted for under Topic 710. Now, there were some old SEC speeches and other interpretive guidance, but the FASB and the Private Company Council felt that smaller companies, this is typically an issue with private companies, perhaps really didn't have access to all these resources, and it was really unclear for them how to analyze these awards when it wasn't directly addressed in the codification. So that's why they added a project to the agenda to try to clarify the scoping for these types of arrangements.
Yeah, thanks, Nick. So I have a question. You know, you mentioned a facts and circumstances approach to determining whether a profits interest award is share-based payment under Topic 718, or it's a form of deferred comp under Topic 710. And I know the first question someone is going to ask when they see one of these profits interests is that they're not familiar with the transaction is, you know, is it really equity? So is the first step in the analysis to figure out whether the profits interest is really equity?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, we kind of look back at SEC speeches and other non-authoritative guidance. You'll see the Big Four all list out a bunch of different factors to consider. But really the objective of the evaluation and determining the right accounting for these is whether that profits interest award or the profits interest unit itself is a substantive class of equity, or in contrast, whether or not there was this overall plan and the distributions being paid to the employees was really just more acting like a cash bonus or profit sharing plan. So there were a lot of factors that we might consider, but I broadly would put them in three categories. So a profits interest would be a substantive class of equity and potential share-based payment if they're legal form equity. Two, the instrument provides the holder with rights, the residual assets of the company. And under the plan, the grantee can actually vest in the award, meaning they could voluntarily quit, leave the company, and retain a vested profits interest unit. And then that profits interest unit continues to give them rights to the residual net assets of the company. In other words, when all said and done and the employees vested in the award, do they become and have rights similar to any other equity holder in the company? Now, in contrast, when their profits interest, when you cut through all of the terms and the different arrangements, if it's just giving somebody the right to a cash distribution based on continued employment, well, that will start to sound more like some sort of a cash bonus than a share-based plan or share-based payment arrangement. And that would be accounted for under like 710 for deferred compensation arrangements.
Yeah, very helpful, Nick. Thank you. One last thing before we hear from Rivka. Tell us briefly on the different outcomes between ASC 718 and ASC 710.
Yeah, there's probably a lot of different outcomes, but let me see if I can just summarize the key issues. So I guess starting out, both 718 and 710 would require some compensation expense to be recorded in the entity's books. Now, the amount, though, and the timing could differ a lot between 718 and 710. So 718, you would recognize the grant date fair value over the requisite service period. So if it's just a time-based vesting, say a time vested over 4 years, the grant date fair value, if it's equity classified, would be recognized over those 4 years. Now, 710 says to recognize the amount the employee is expected to be entitled to receive in cash over the service period, and you do that in a systematic and rational basis. I think the trick under a lot of these profits interest awards is the employee actually isn't going to be entitled to any cash until an exit or liquidity event, because that's oftentimes required to cross those large waterfall thresholds to allow the employee to be entitled to any sort of cash payment. So under 710, and typically you might not record anything until the exit event occurs, unless sometimes they might be entitled to something a little bit earlier, but a lot of times that will delay everything. And under 718, if it's time vested, you'd vest before a change of control or a liquidity event, you would recognize some, whatever the fair value of that award is over the service period.
Yeah, thanks again, Nick. Rivka, turning to you, let's get into some of the details of the new ASU. So tell us what the ASU does and what it does not do.
Sure, John. So the ASU does not add new accounting guidance, and it was not intended to change practice, but rather to help entities and practitioners determine what is in the scope of Topic 718. The ASU provides four cases that illustrate how to apply the existing scoping paragraphs of Topic 718 to these awards. So it's really all focused on the scoping. So let's first understand what that scoping is. A scope of Topic 718, which is in paragraph 718.10.15.3, is centered around whether the settlement relates to the entity's share. So it's not just equity, but if it's somehow the settlement is related to the equity. And that paragraph tells us that 718 applies to all share-based payment transactions in which an entity acquires goods or services by either A, issuing its shares or other equity instruments, or B, incurring liabilities that are, one, based at least in part on the price of the entity's shares or other equity instruments, or it requires or may require settlement by issuing the entity's shares or other equity instruments, such as if there is a choice of share or cash settlement, then it may require settlement by issuing shares. What the illustration does is it takes four cases, all in the same entity, X. It's a partnership. It has already Class A partnership units, I guess that's like their equity. Now it's issuing Class B units to its employees, and the four cases have different scenarios of what these Class B units are. Cases A, B, and C are examples of awards that would be within the scope of Topic 718. cases A and B reached the conclusion that the instrument represents a substantive class of equity using some of the factors that Nick had mentioned. In both of these cases, the holder will participate in the residual net interests of the entity, and they're equity-like in the fact that the holder can retain the interest even after employment. Case C is a phantom share unit. So it's not exactly shares, but it's cash settled. It's not shares at all. The holder will get cash upon an exit event. The amount the holder will receive is based indirectly on the price of the entity's Class A units, which we said were the equity units. Since the award is ultimately tied to the price of the entity's equity units, it fits into that second criteria that I mentioned of a liability that is based, at least in part, on the value of the entity's equity shares. Case D, on the other hand, is an example of an award that would not be within the scope of Topic 718. It's also a phantom share unit, but in this case, the amount that the holder will receive is tied to operating income, but not to the value of the equity. So we see even if it's a cash award, it can be in the scope of Topic 18 if it's tied to the price of the entity's shares. But in this case D, because it was tied to operating income and not to the value of the entity's equity awards, it is not within the scope of Topic 718.
Yeah, thanks, Rivka. So it sounds like the ASU is providing these really good examples to stakeholders to kind of navigate between the two ASC topics. So what are some of the benefits to stakeholders as a result of this ASU?
So stakeholders indicated that there is diversity in practice when evaluating the terms, conditions, and characteristics of a profits interest award. And so this ASU provides bookends of when an instrument is clearly within 718 and when it's not. It does not define or address what is equity, but the examples provide the rationale and they evaluate the facts similarly to the way we generally do, considering the factors that Nick had mentioned previously about what would make us determine that the award really is a substantive class of equity. And as we saw, they hit a lot of those same points, whether there's a right to residual net interests or if the instruments vest or everything is forfeited when they stop being employed. So the ASU does give the user what to think about when evaluating if the award is within the scope of Topic 718. So it also highlights when Topic 718 applies to liabilities, to cash settled awards. So the ASU does give the user what to think about when evaluating if the award is within the scope of Topic 718.
Yeah, thanks, Rivka. Nick, take us home with an overview of the effective date and transition.
Sure. So ASU is effective for public entities in annual and interim periods and fiscal years beginning after December 15th, 2024. So for calendar companies, it's going to be effective starting in 2025. For all other entities, the ASU becomes effective 1 year later. Now, this ASU could be applied either prospectively or retrospectively. If it's prospectively, it's to new or modified awards. If you do it retrospectively, Topic 250 disclosures on adopting a new accounting policy apply. When prospective, you just need to describe kind of the nature of and reason for the change. I would probably expect that a lot of companies are just going to apply this prospectively, so they don't have to go back and look at awards entered into a long time ago. But and I think the FASB felt the same way, but they just wanted to allow companies to go back if they thought it was better financial reporting.
Nick and Rivka, thank you so much for spending time chatting with us today. I think that was a great overview of the FASB's new ASU on profits, interest, and similar awards. And I am certainly looking forward to speaking with you again on future podcasts. Thanks again.
Thank you for listening to this KPMG Financial Reporting Podcast. For more in-depth financial reporting developments, analysis, and podcast episodes, please visit frv.kpmg.us and be sure to subscribe today. Also, we are social. You can also follow us on LinkedIn at KPMG Financial Reporting View or with hashtag KPMGFRV.